Boom, I am recording. Welcome to an impromptu, is that the word? Podcast where I'm not prepared with anything and made a new friend on the internet this morning through a node in our network, former Twitter user, now disappeared, Gordon Fang GT, known in the Nassim Taleb world on Twitter. Yeah, I talked to him on Signal for like an hour the other night. He messaged me out of the blue because he read an article I wrote about what it's like being an independent contractor and surviving. And then he mentioned that you and I had a very similar perspective on life. So I sent you a message out of the blue, and then we ended up talking today.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I saw that, and I'm in a phase right now where I'm kind of like branching out more, or I should say reaching out and trying to connect with like-minded people that are like, you know, because for a long time I don't know what kind of community you're in. This is like the first time we're talking. We literally just started talking 2 minutes ago. So, but for a long time I was part of certain communities, I guess. And now I'm kind of branching out more towards like Taleb's work and all this different kind of stuff. And, you know, trying to meet like-minded people in that whole realm. So that was part of the reason why I was like, you know, just interested in reaching out.
Yeah, I had this kind of mind-opening experience last year where I ended up quitting an office job that made me pretty much go insane. And just out of like sheer survival, I started working random labor jobs as a contractor in an industry I didn't understand at all. And I started reading Taleb at the same time. I would listen to his audiobook as I was building furniture for offices all over Vancouver. And then I sort of started to get this idea that, hey, maybe I can survive as this contractor who works all these different jobs. And I kind of learned these lessons where sometimes you get comfortable working for the same client over and over again, and then suddenly it goes dry. And Taleb calls it the turkey problem that a lot of employees can expect too at some point, where maybe you're working at a startup and you're expecting you're going to be there for the long run, and then they're out of funding and you're cut. And it's kind of like a turkey who's fed every day, and then suddenly the turkey master decides to kill him on Turkey Day on Thanksgiving. So yeah, I've been learning all these different ways to survive doing work in different industries. Lately, I started doing remote work, and now with like coronavirus, I'm hiding in my apartment writing. And we just had a death like 10 minutes from my house. So I'm kind of like, I just got offered some labor work next week, and I woke up sick yesterday and I went to the doctor and got antibiotics, and I'm like freaking out whether I should just stay at home and write and not take this higher paying labor job that could be very useful to my bank account. So it's like you have to decide these things whereas if I was an employee and my company was like, yo, you have to come into work, we don't care about coronavirus, you can't work remote here, then that might be a fucking big issue.
Right. Yeah. So what kind of office job were you doing?
I was working as a writer for a publication in Vancouver that writes content for tech companies and finance, and I thought I could do it, but I had very bad habits back then too. I was drinking a lot to compensate after work, and I kind of just blew up, but it kind of worked out. Like, my mom always tells me things like, you know, sometimes you think, and I'm sure you follow Paul Portesi on Twitter as well.
Yeah.
And he always talks about how things emerge, and sort of like from this blow up I had, this other different world I never could have expected of trying to survive independently came out of nowhere. And then I kind of tried to be a journalist for a bit in South America, so that was sort of independent, but I wasn't making any money down there. I was just sort of financing it from money I saved in Canada. So I was always kind of like, always wanted to be free, where I didn't have to have this 9-to-5 schedule and being scared of an employer firing you and having to suck up to people like that. So I don't know. I'm just learning all these different things in the last 8 months. Like, I'm not an expert. I might still blow up financially. Who knows? Like, some months I'll have like these big paydays, and then the next month it's dry as shit. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm
27.
Yeah, 27. How about you?
I'm 24.
24. Okay, so when I was your age, I was what was I doing? I was in university. That was only 3 years ago. And I think that's right when I went to South America and tried to be a journalist or whatever. And that's when I was like experimenting with freedom at first. What are your sort of philosophies? Since GT said we had like a very similar way of thought, like what are you experimenting with? He said you were coding or trying to learn how to build apps and stuff.
Yeah. Well, first of all, yeah, interesting story. Thanks for sharing. And yeah, on my end, I would say, you know, we definitely have some similarities. To give you some background, I mean, even just going back, way back, like I just never fit into school mold. I was never like a good student. So I kind of grew up with like a self-concept that maybe something was wrong with me, you know, because I didn't fit into like the structure of school and stuff like that. I never got good grades, like almost ever. To me, school was just like something I had to do because the adults just controlled my life at that point. So I had to just get it out the way and just endure it somehow. And I did it, graduated with a high school diploma. And then at that point, I got into like self-improvement and spirituality and all these different things. And I kind of didn't really know what to do. At that point, if you asked me what I wanted to do at 17 or 18, actually, I wanted to join the military for a long time because I always had this like idea of wanting to be this warrior and all this kind of stuff. And, but then I got into like conspiracies and started learning about history and how like, it kind of made me not trust the government as much. So I was kind of lost for a while and I was like, I don't want to really put my life in the hands of somebody I don't trust. And then, got into all this like spirituality stuff and then kind of confused. I just felt like maybe doing like wandering or something. I don't know. And then my parents forced me to go to school for like a year. They were like, just do it, please. Just see if you like it. And I did, but I didn't like it. I went to university for a year. I actually dormed there and everything. Did pretty horribly. My mom like chose my major and shit. And, yeah. And at that point I got in touch with some content about like starting your own business online and stuff. And I was about 18. So after I dropped out, or as I like to say, moved on, I tried starting my first online business, which was basically hiring contractors in third world countries to build things that I would sell to other people. Like I was basically a middleman. Like websites and animated videos and things like that. And I made some money, but you know, you mentioned bad habits. You know, I also definitely had some bad habits at the time in terms of my work ethic. Like I just didn't understand what it takes to really run a business, I guess. So anyways, basically long story short, I started like a bunch of businesses like that. And I kind of just would start them and then quit them, start them and quit them. And I'd make couple bucks here and there, but nothing serious. And then I did that for a while and I worked kind of like just whatever job I can get. And I have my mom married this guy and he has his own business around here. And I worked with him for a few years but I never really took any outside job seriously. Like it was always just my business first. And then, you know, I just try to make money on the side type of thing. And that's been pretty much the case for a long time. You know, I'm 24 now. It's been the case for a few years. I've had all kinds of jobs, waiter. I did construction as well. Actually, this summer I was doing, working on framing houses and all that kind of stuff. And basically none of my businesses worked. I started that blog that you said has freaking spam all over it now, which I got to get checked out. And that actually kind of picked up. Like I got a few thousand subscribers. People liked my stuff. I'm actually embarrassed about my blog, to be honest now. Like if you look at it, a lot of it, to me at least, seems like cheesy self-improvement shit, but it got me through what I needed to go through at the time. And then people told me like I should make money off of that. And I was like, nah, I don't really like the idea of being a 24-year-old guru or any of that. Like I don't want to place myself in that kind of position. So I never really like tried to monetize it. I mean, I tried like a little bit, but never really succeeded. So anyways, now I'm at a point where I tried enough businesses to kind of get a feel for what I like. And I and I like the opportunities as well that you get with like software engineering and everything. And I like how many skills you can learn that complement it. Like, it's a cool field because it's really flexible. You can learn a certain programming language, and then you can learn animation, and then you can learn a bit of engineering, and then you can learn this and that. And it just, a lot of it mixes well. And, you know, I have a very like curious mind. So it fits well with my mind basically. And I'm finishing up here now. I know I've been.
No problem, dude.
So basically, yeah, I've been trying to do that for a while, but just learning on the side myself. I tried a coding bootcamp, but it was way too fast paced. I like learning things my own way. And at the same time, I started working in EMS or emergency medical services just to make some cash and also learn a cool skill. So now I work on an ambulance basically as my day job. You know, so that's all right. I mean, it's one of those jobs, like Taleb says, where it's a more natural workflow. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Cause you're not working from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. like nonstop with predetermined breaks. It's kind of more random. Like, on one day you might not get any calls. I mean, it happens occasionally where nobody calls in. So you just get paid for not doing shit. And then another day you might get 10 calls and you're busy the whole day. And it's like, I like that. And another cool thing about it is it's a non-BS skill. You know, it's not like some skill set where you can kind of BS your way in. Like, I don't know, I guess Taleb talks about bankers or whatever, economists being that way. But with this, it's like you have a patient there and you have to make sure they make it to the hospital and you have your predetermined protocols, and it's just like a cool skill set. So that's my main thing. And then on the side, I'm just learning software engineering and UX design and stuff like that. And I do other shit too. I mean, like I said, because of my blog, I have a lot of writing experience now too. And, you know, I'm kind of a writer as well, I guess. And I have some opportunities to pursue that as well. So anyways, that's kind of long speech there, but since we just met, I figured I'd give you the background.
Yeah, no problem, dude. I've got a few thoughts actually that popped up into my head. One example is like when I was doing this furniture construction in offices, I actually met a guy who's in a similar position to you. He used that job as a way to keep himself alive, feed himself, have a roof over his head. And at night, he was teaching himself how to code, like deep into the night, because he wants to work in blockchain and the cryptocurrency fields and stuff like that. And I believe in that kid, because he would show up like half alive every morning. He's like, oh man, I was coding up until 2 a.m. and then we're starting at 8 a.m. So I was like, you know what? I think he was the same age as me, about 26, 27. And I was like, you know what, dude, I believe in you. Keep going through the shit. And then the other thing is that over the holidays, tried to do the free coding bootcamp.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Paul Portesi talks about this a few times too, how like you can try to do some things, but like if you don't have like the emotional alignment, it's hard to like keep pushing into something, even though you think it's like going to lead to a better world for yourself or for others or whatever. Mm-hmm. And my first try at coding, I had a bit of like, when I solved like some HTML problems, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool actually, when I figured it out.
Yeah.
But I never got hooked on it yet. I haven't given it another chance still. Right. And Gordon brought this up. He's like, why don't you learn how to code? And I was like, you know what? I don't know. The first time I did it, I didn't have that alignment. And then I started reading those Reddit posts where people are like, man, I've been trying to learn for years and I still can't get a job. My life is so useless. So I kind of screwed myself over by reading that kind of shit. But yeah, so like right now I've just been, I thought I was going to stop writing forever after I quit that job. And then I sort of just landed back into freelance writing for Decrypt, writing about crypto and blockchain news and stuff like that. And it's kind of cool actually, because it's a skill set I had when I was writing news in South America. And it's kind of like coding in a way. Like I read all the stuff these companies are saying. I interview their executives, and then I have to... Basically, writing it for news articles is like solving a puzzle where you have to find the narrative, how all the paragraphs connect, question their storylines. That's a problem I just mentioned to you today, that I wrote an article that was way too PR heavy, and there was a big on the side story that questioned like whether this company was going to screw people over with privacy and stuff like that, and I missed it. So like it's a learning experience. Like sometimes I'm like, yeah, I'm a fucking professional writer, journalist, whatever bullshit, But there's still a lot to learn, like, especially if you get too overconfident, then you get that kick in the ass by reality. And it's like, oh, you actually have much more to learn, Frank. Calm down.
Right. Yeah. And I could see like why Gordon tried to like say that, you know, we had similar mindsets. And to add to all this, like you said, wait, so you went to South America, like you said you were working there.
Yeah, so what I would do was I would save a bunch of money in Vancouver over the summer, and then I flew down by myself and tried to get into journalism. So I started writing for free for a bunch of places. I started DMing a shitload of journalists, and I was like, yo, how the fuck do I get started in this? Like, I don't have any clips. All my university papers are crap. Like, how do I? And they're like, dude, just write for free. And it just turned out that I'm Venezuelan, so my family's like suffering through this crisis next door in Venezuela through an economic crisis and all this shit.
Right.
And it turned out my cousin was going to visit with me, but it turned out that his business kept getting robbed and like mugged by gangs and shit. So he's like, dude, I have to leave Venezuela. I'm moving to Colombia. We're not traveling anymore. I need to find a life there. So I like flew in at the same time. I helped him start his life. And then I wrote in this newspaper called the Bogota Post, which is an English newspaper, about that story, about what it was like being like this. Like, I'm not rich by any means, but living in Canada, North America just puts you in a different economic world. Like, you can work any bullshit job and save money here. Whereas, like, in South America, it's like you are living paycheck to paycheck, working 6-7 days a week, and you can barely put fucking a roof and food on your table. Like, so, like, I wrote about that reality where I was helping a cousin who was coming over after selling his business and had like less than $500 to his name start a life, while I was being like this, you know, the typical, like what you said earlier, like when you go through that phase where you're like, I need to wander around and figure out what my life is about and all this shit.
Right.
Like, some people don't have that opportunity. Some people have to like go into deep survival mode right away and try to figure shit out.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, man. You ever heard of like this blog called Good Looking Loser?
No, can you explain it?
No, I was just listening to them. He's like a funny dude. He started this blog, and he's you know, he just talks about like it's like a blog for men, and you know, he kind of has like this hardcore, like no bullshit kind of speech. I don't really listen to his stuff that much anyway. I'm not really into it, but I forgot where I was going with this. It's a funny blog. And yeah, he was saying, like, I was listening to a podcast by him, and he was like, if you live in the US or Canada or whatever, you're already in like the 0.01% of the world, like financially and stuff. And he's like, you know, he was saying that to kind of tell people to kind of relax a little bit. Like, don't be so hard on yourself. Like, you've already kind of made it in a lot of ways just by being here, you know? And he was mostly saying that for guys in their 20s that are like putting all this stress on themselves to make it. You know, he was like, dude, you're gonna figure it out, and just know that you're already kind of like way above the world when it comes to economics and stuff. And I was like, that's kind of true. I mean, shit, like, you know, when I drive around in my car listening to my iPhone podcast playing with good speakers and air conditioning and shit, that's a huge luxury. I mean, 1,000 years ago, kings would have probably went to war for a device like the iPhone that gives them access to so much information. So it's just funny how like perspective shift. And now you see people like driving around and they all have like this miserable face, and you're like, damn, like you got it so good, but you're, you know, but perspectives change and people will kind of lose track of the reality of things.
Yeah, last year I remember I had a bit of a breakdown where I was telling my mom, I'm like, I'm never going to make it as a journalist. I was like crying and shit. And she's like, Frank, relax. Like, you have so much time. And like, you get to live in Canada where it's like pretty easy to get by if you just have a side job or something. When I was in South America, dude, I would take these Ubers, and there were so many professionals driving these Ubers just to make extra money. And they would just beg me like, dude, how do I get into Canada? How do I take my family to Canada? Like, life here in Colombia is so difficult. I'm working like they're working a middle class job there, and they still can't make ends meet. Like, I've heard about a friend of mine works, her brother works in Mexico City, and he's an engineer, and he like makes like half of what like a construction worker makes here a month, working like a professional white collar career type thing. So it's like, just by having the Canadian passport or the American passport or European passport, you like get access to this higher echelon where it's like relatively easy to take risks if you aren't obsessed with like modernity's conveniences and over leveraging yourself with debt and stuff like that. Like you can take a shot at the payoff space. Like what's his name? Paul Scalise likes to talk about.
Right. Yeah.
That's a fucking funny account.
Yeah, man. Paul is an interesting guy. You're the second guy that Gordon introduced me to. The first one was Paul, actually, because
yeah,
I was going through like a breakup at the time, and I forget how we even got into it, but basically Gordon was like, dude, you should just talk to Paul about this. And I'm like, I don't even know this guy, but all right. So I ended up calling him and we just spoke for a while, and turns out he, and I was also going through like a lot of like confusion about my life as well. Like these 2019 was a fucking hard year. It sounds like it was for you as well, right?
Yeah, it was an extremely volatile year. At one point, I thought I had made it into the middle class. I was shouting to my friends that I was in the middle class because I got this office job for the first time. And then fucking volatility crashed my brain. Then I worked all these random jobs. So, yeah, it was good and bad.
Oh, so you basically, when you first got that job, you thought you like hit the jackpot. And then eventually that's what made you kind of go crazy, like you say?
Yeah, dude. I thought I hit the jackpot. I was literally shouting to my friends when I got the job. I was like, I get paid to sit on the internet all day and write about things. But I ended up not liking it. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen. I assumed that, I'm finally a paid writer now. I've made it. I'm in the middle class. I can start paying down my student loans. I was telling my friends I was going to start investing all this shit. My salary wasn't even that big, dude. Mm-hmm. And within 3 months, I crashed and then led to this new volatile life I'm in. And I just did my tax return 2 days ago, and I was looking at my profits and loss sheet for each month. And like 1 month would be a big month, and then the next month was below the poverty line. So it's like, it's kind of cool. I was talking to another friend in the DMs today about it. I was like, it's kind of cool to take this chance, but at the same time, like, I've applied recently to office jobs again because I'm kind of feeling this volatility, especially when the volatility goes down and I'm like, Jesus Christ, how the fuck am I going to pay the rent? Or how am I not going to go negative this month? I've got money saved, so I'm not like that worried about it, but like I've only got a few months worth of money right now. So it's like I have to keep hunting and hustling and trying to find shit to do. If I end up trapped in my house and I'm not making any money, then it just gets worse. And then your mind starts compounding with worries and all this shit. So it's kind of taught me to hunt too. I guess if you're like in an office job, you stop hunting for things because you're like, you're pretty much domesticated. You have that guaranteed paycheck or supposed guaranteed paycheck that could disappear at any moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a huge lesson for me as well in 2019. Like I said, I was kind of doing like BS jobs up until that point. Meaning like, you know, when you work for a family business, it's kind of easy to get into that, like, you don't even give a shit mentality, you know? Like there's two ways you could take it. You could take it like that you give a huge shit because it's your family, or you take it like, they won't care if I, you know, if I kind of like slack off and do the bare minimum because they're my family. What are they going to do? And in my specific case, it was a business that like, it was easy to kind of just slack off in basically. And, you know, and my stepdad is the one that runs it and everything. And he's kind of retiring and he's not even taking it that seriously himself. So it was just easy for me to not take it that seriously. So basically what I'm trying to say is that like I never really like had a real, real job where I really had a manager and really had to perform and everything, like other than like the few construction jobs and shit like that. But I only did that for like a few months. So basically in 2019, I was like, look, I'm tired of all this stuff. I want to get like a real job and then maybe start a business. So I started this coding boot camp. And once again, like those things are pretty intense, you know, and I wasn't prepared for it. Like I said, I was never great in school and I just didn't have the study skills built up. So when I got hit with all this shit, I was like, whoa, like this isn't even enjoyable. I can't even like dive into anything. I have to just torture myself and learn all this stuff really fast. So I was like, fuck this. So I quit. And I was basically depressed for like months after that. Cause I was like, damn, like and a bunch of other stuff happened as well. That wasn't the only thing, but that was the big one. And I had that similar thought as you of like, damn, like I'm tired of relying on handouts and like easy positions in my life. Like I want to feel like I earned something, you know, it like for me particularly, maybe for some people this doesn't matter, but I think for a lot of people it does. But I had to feel like I really, like I'm earning something, like I'm meriting what's being given to me. And it was messing with my head that like, not only did I not have that much money coming in, but like, you know, I kind of had it easy and stuff, you know, with the bit like family business and stuff like that. And, so basically that's when I went to EMT school, which is, you know, emergency medical technician. They work on ambulances. I did that for like 3 or 4 months. I worked as a driver for a freaking wheelchair. So like old people, like from the nursing home to the hospital and stuff like that. And that's actually when I got into Nassim Taleb's work. And I'll even tell you the story of the quick freaking way of how I got into it. This was right around that time. I read some of Taleb's work about 2 years ago or 3 years ago, but I never understood it. I was like, I don't know. Everybody keeps talking about it. I dived into it a little bit and I was like, I can't get this. But I knew one thing. I knew it was something intelligent. Like I knew there was some substance there, but I just couldn't crack the code. And so during my whole depression, during this time where I'm driving people all the time and I'm going to EMT school at night and I'm basically working my ass off, I had a dream where basically Taleb showed up in my dream. And it was so weird because like I never barely even paid attention to him. I just knew that there was something about his books, but that was the only thought. And so in the dream, Taleb to me appeared like a father figure. And like, you know, my father wasn't really around. He's actually dead now. He's been dead for a few years. So I always had like a desire for like a father figure or like a mentor or something. And anyways, in the dream, he like appeared and he felt like a freaking father figure. Like, I just remember the feeling. And I was like, man, that's so weird. And basically, that made me go, you know what? Maybe that's like a sign or something. Maybe I should just check out his work again. So anyways, during this freaking van driving job, the best part about it, it was horrible pay. I mean, it was basically minimum wage. But, and you never get tipped, by the way. This isn't a taxi service. You know, this is like old people and they're using insurance money to pay for this shit. So I never get tipped. So it's not good for the pay. But the great thing about it is that there's no fucking manager breathing down your throat. You're by yourself. And I could pop my headphones in and listen to shit all day long. And like nobody can say anything. All I have to do is make sure I just pick up the old people. So anyways, I started listening to Taleb's work. And I listened and I listened and I listened. And all of a sudden I started getting a lot of it. And I was like, wow, like this stuff actually makes sense now. And then I ended up listening to all of his books, like every single book he had, except Dynamic Hedge Funding or whatever. I listened to all his books and it just like fucking clicked, man. And like, I was like, holy shit, there's so much like information here, so much insight. And it made me feel better about how my mind worked. Cause like I said, I never really did good in school, blah, 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 blah. And it made me realize like I'm more of a non-linear thinker, I guess. And, yeah. So that, and then I ended up becoming an EMT. And once I became an EMT, you know, and now that I'm making money actually doing something, it's not something I really want to do. Like I'm not that passionate about it at all. Like I want to work on my own stuff, but psychologically it feels fucking good to at least know I'm making some money. It's a stable position. Cause once you're certified, you can kind of, it's kind of easy to get a job. Hospitals or whatever, EMS agencies are always in need of EMTs. So it's like what Taleb talks about with the barbell. You have the stability on the one side and then you have like the risk taking on the other. And like, it feels good to have the stability side of things covered. So I know where you're coming from, where you talk about like it's cool in one way to have like all this volatility and the ups and downs of it. But at the same time, it is kind of nerve wracking. And I totally understand why you're applying for like office jobs and shit like that.
Yeah, sometimes I question it because I've kind of been developing this thought process over the last few years that there are just some jobs that give you more mental space to try things out after work. So when I had that office job, dude, I had no mental space after work. I was fried. I would sit in front of the TV and watch Netflix or whatever, eat a shitload of pizza, and would just feel worse and worse, and then start drinking and stuff like that. Completely unhealthy. When I got the labor job, dude, I was physically tired after work, but I started getting stronger. My body started feeling better. Dude, my back pain went away from working labor than from sitting at a desk. And I had this ability where my mind was still fresh after work to like do podcasts, to read a bunch of books, to like explore all these topics and all this stuff. So sometimes I like question whether I should even try to go back to this office world, even if I think it'd be a good career or if it's like related to fields I like, because I know what it's like when you're doing the knowledge world stuff or anything that involves like sitting at a desk all day or bureaucratic meetings and all this shit, it's draining, man. So like having that labor job that pays you enough to save a little bit of money and pay all your bills is actually a beautiful thing if you want to try for that payoff space thing after work or just to experiment and do things.
I mean, the cool thing about being an EMT is it's very similar. Like I said, you know, because you get times where there's 10 calls and then there's times where there's 3 calls. And in between that time, you're not being told what to do. Like you're sitting at the station and there's Wi-Fi there and you're just working on your own shit. And so a lot of guys run their own businesses, like little online stuff, doing that kind of work. And I totally agree, man. There's definitely jobs that are mentally draining at the end of the day. And you kind of got me thinking too, like sometimes I get kind of eager and I'm like, man, I really want to get a coding job. And now after we spoke about this, it kind of does make me wonder, like, man, if I get one and they try to give me full-time hours, am I going to have the mental energy to really work on anything on the side? Like it's debatable, you know, it's definitely tough to muster that kind of energy after you've been working a cognitively demanding job like that. I mean, especially writing too, because you know, you're sitting there, you're trying to dig into your mind and make sure that everything is good, and you're editing and you're questioning. And yeah, when you do like a labor job, I had the same thing, man. I still remember when I did my construction job this summer. I would come home like, but it felt good. Like I felt like I was getting stronger, right? For sure. And the other thing too is like, man, I felt like my testosterone went up, man. Like I used to
100%.
Dude, my girlfriend used to come home, my ex at this point, and I would just dish, you know, like after a 10-hour freaking construction day, I'd be like so freaking aggressive, you know what I mean? But like when you sit around, it's like your energy gets stagnant and you kind of get like passive and low energy in a way, right?
Yeah, another thing I changed right when I started doing the construction work was that like my whole life I've been eating so much processed food, and I've talked about it a lot on Twitter how I, like the industrial goo man just like sucks the energy out of you with all this fucking crap food. So I was like, when I was working that office job I mentioned, I was eating like 2 or 3 instant pizzas a day, dude. Like after work I would eat a fucking full pizza and drinking soda and all this shit. And then I think it was a part of Taleb talking about a little bit of low carb in there. And then I started following a bunch of other people on Twitter. And I've gone, like, for the last 8 months, I cook like 99% of my meals at home. Mm. Only vegetables and meat, a little bit of rice. I don't eat processed bread anymore. And that shit upped my testosterone like crazy. My face changed, dude. I used to be like skinny fat as hell. And now I'm like back to my high school weight or lower. Got vascular arms from lifting all this fucking furniture for hours. At one point, dude, I didn't eat carbs for like a month, for a whole month. And I worked like 28 days in a row of physical heavy ass furniture labor. And I felt fine, dude. I was like, I would see all these old guys who have Tim Hortons, which is like, I don't know if you guys have it down there.
No, we have it. Yeah.
They'd eat Tim Hortons for breakfast, then at lunch McDonald's or some sort of fucking fast food. And by that point, you're done, dude. Like you are in a carbo-loaded mess. You got all this processed sugar inside of you and they're done. And I'm just like, let's go. Let's keep fucking unloading these trucks. Like, and I just noticed like this change. So like now, even though like this diet that I'm on where I have to cook from home is kind of my grocery bills have gone up. I don't eat out at all. Like maybe when I go out with my girlfriend, I will go to like a Japanese restaurant or some shit. But that was like another big thing that people need to take in mind, like how much bad food can fuck up with your head. Because I felt like all this mental fog disappeared. Like, even now when I get stressed that I can't find work or something, like, it's much more easier to, for me to go and attack the world and try to find a new job or a new project that'll bring in income than sitting at home and, like, moping all day eating fucking processed food. Like, it's hard to get out of that mental state when you're eating junk. I don't know if you've gone through this transformation yet, but I definitely recommend it. Like, I keep yelling about it on Twitter. Like, you have to banish the industrial goo man from your life. You have to take control of your fucking diet and just eat what our ancestors have been fucking eating for thousands of years.
Dude, I couldn't agree more, man. I had the same issue. Like, I grew up in Queens, New York City, and that's pretty much where I spent, like, the first 18 years of my life or so. And, yeah, like, my parents, or I guess my mom, I was, you know, raised by her for the most part. She didn't know about, like, nutrition that much. So I grew up eating a crap ton of junk food, man. I was definitely addicted to junk food for many years. And yeah, and towards 15, 16 years old, I started getting into, I actually had like a binge problem. I used to binge on junk food all the time.
Yeah, same, dude. And I still do if I allow it in. Sorry to interrupt you.
It's all right, man. Yeah, I get the same thing sometimes. But like before, I used to have it like happen at least once or twice a week, like the whole day. And it was other stuff too, like even porn. Like, I went through a problem with that for a while because I was like part of the first generation, I think, where internet high-speed porn became, you know, really available, I guess. And
yeah, even Tinder, dude. Tinder's a fucking huge addiction that I've gone through, and a lot of my friends have gone through, and I think it's in the similar categories. Yes, it's the same mental state you get in.
For sure, dude. I went through all that shit, man. Like, I didn't know it was bad for you until probably 15 years old, 16 years old was when I started realizing it was a problem. And I tried to discipline myself. And for a while it worked, but then I realized like what the underlying issue is, you know, because sometimes that's what it is. Like, sometimes it's not really that you don't know it's bad for you. It's that you're using it as self-medication. So
100%.
You know, and you know it's bad for you. And that even Taleb talks about that. He's like, it's not that you don't know. Like, it's not that we have a lack of knowledge. It's that we're still animals at the end of the day. And like, that stuff is made to take advantage of our biological impulses, number one. And number two is that we're human beings. Like, we have emotions and all this kind of stuff. And like, if shit's going wrong and we don't have good ways of dealing with pain, we're going to self-medicate, right?
There's a really famous doctor in Vancouver, and he's been on like, I don't know if he's been on Joe Rogan, but he's been on a lot of podcasts where he talks about how most addictions, whether it's doing drugs, whether it's your addiction to money, whether it's buying things, is mostly, it's usually people self-medicating, and they use like this, and even like going on Twitter and shit when you're bored, like you're just self-medicating to get that dopamine high. And like, so a lot of the times here in Vancouver, there's like a big drug problem on the streets. And like, a lot of people are like, fuck, I can't believe these people can't get their lives together. They should just need to get a job and, you know, just try to survive like we are and whatever. But a lot of these people got so fucked, dude. Like, yeah. Just like their parents beating them up or, you know, sexual related things like that. Trauma, and people are fucking self-medicating, whether it was us after the work we hated drinking or eating that pizza or whatever. That was just a way to cope with the frustrations you have with your life. And like, even like today, I still fall for these things. Like, sometimes I'll go buy a beer after a day where I've been writing all day and my brain feels fried. Like, I'm still doing it. It's gotten a lot better, but I'm by no means perfect at it. I'm still fucking addicted to nicotine, dude. I've been smoking. Right now I'm chewing nicotine gum, and it's just one of those things, dude. It's just what happens to people.
Yeah, I actually went through a little nicotine phase too a few months ago. My buddy, he's going through like a redneck phase right now, and he started doing chewing tobacco.
Oh, I've been on that too.
Yeah. So he gives it to me one day, and I actually liked it. I was like, man, he gave me Skoal Wintergreen. And yep. I was like, this is kind of neat. And it gave me like this little head rush. And I was like, all right. And I tried it, and I actually did it almost every day for like a month. And then I started realizing like, this is kind of messing with first of all, it would make me feel nauseous sometimes. And and I wouldn't get like the same head rush. And I also felt like it kind of caused some anxiety sometimes too. So I started feeling like I was kind of becoming a little bit dependent on it. And I hate feeling like something else is controlling me. Like when I become aware, like if I'm not aware of it, then fine, because I'm not aware of it. So it's just controlling me. And to me, it's like, oh, I'm fine. But when I realize that it's controlling me, then it just drives me fucking insane. And it'll still control me for many years, but I'll be very upset about it. So anyways, that's what ended up happening with the chewing tobacco. And I kind of realized I was doing it a little too much. And then like magic though, for some weird reason, I did it one day and I couldn't enjoy it anymore. I literally like chewed it and I was like, ugh, this is nasty. And ever since then, I haven't done it. Like it's been months.
Good for you, because my friends make fun of me all the time because I go on, I've even ranted about it on Twitter before, where I'm like, I'll bet money against my family members or my girlfriend recently, where I'm like, I'm not going to consume any nicotine for a month. And the last one I did, I actually failed because it's like really hard to quit a drug like that when you're going through like financial stress, or like I went through a month where I was barely finding any work. Mm. It all dried up and then I fucking went back onto it. And that's one thing that's fucking controlled me for the last year or so, especially with writing. I find it so hard to write without nicotine.
Yeah.
And lately I've been writing all day for a publication I mentioned, so it's been very hard to kick it. I tried to kick it one day and I went till noon and I was having like all these depressive thoughts, and then I didn't have coffee that day too, and I went till noon, like 5 hours since I woke up. Mm. I had one sip of coffee and I smoked a cigar, dude, and I was like, boom, back to normal, I can write again. I was like, damn, dude, that's kind of fucked up.
It's funny you say the cigar. I actually have a cup full of cigar freaking butts in front of me right now, because I do use that as well as a tool. But I'm not like, I don't think I'm addicted to it. I think what I typically go through is sometimes I'll go like a month without smoking a cigar, but then other times I'll smoke like 4 or 5 cigars in a month. But I'll just take like a few puffs and then that's it, you know? And then I'll just clip it and then I'll save it. And then maybe 2 days later, I'll take a few more puffs type of thing, but not anything excessive.
Yeah, that's definitely, I've thought about this like my whole life. It's definitely a problem I've had where I'm either zero or all in. Like it's very hard for me to be on a middle ground or something.
It's just funny, bro. I had the same fucking issue, man. I was like a 0 to 100 guy for like the longest time, man. Like a lot of my friends know this. Like sometimes I'd read like a book on business or whatever, and I'd absorb all these new ideas, and then I'd start applying them. And then next thing you know, I'm waking up at 5 a.m. and I'm doing all this crazy shit, and it lasts for like 10 days. Actually, dude, I have a tattoo on my arm that where I committed to a challenge because I was so pissed at myself for like constantly messing up things that I created this whole challenge for myself. Like I was going to work out 3 times a week. I was only going to eat junk food once a week, blah, 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 blah. I made a whole freaking list and I tattooed my freaking arm. I'm looking at the tattoo right now. And it says 365 in Roman numerals, and there's a Spartan helmet, which is basically my logo for my blog. And the whole idea, and I even made videos about it. I told everybody I was going to do it, and I lasted like 2 fucking weeks. And then it was just horrible, man. I was trying to put so much pressure on myself to be perfect for a year that it created all this like turmoil internally. And I struggled for many, many months and probably over a year to try to get back on the challenge, and then fucking up and then getting back on the challenge and then messing up and then changing the challenge. And then I realized, thanks to Taleb Bartley, that you can't really go zero. You can't really be either or too much. You can only be for certain periods of time. So now I kind of changed things up. So now it's like, before I used to get mad at myself if I skipped the gym one day. But now I have a different mentality altogether. It's like, okay, this week I'm going to go to the gym. Like my goal is I want to be fit. I want to be strong. I want to be healthy. But I'm not going to be obsessive about the details. So for instance, this week, I'm not going to set this rigid standard of I'm going to have to do 3 workouts this week. No, I'll try to average out 3 workouts. But if this week I happen to do 1 workout, it's not that big a deal. And then next week, maybe I'll do 5 workouts. And then the week after that, maybe I'll do two workouts. And then maybe this week I'll eat healthy 5 days out of the week. And then next week I'll eat healthy 3 days out of the week. And then next week I might eat, you know, healthy the whole week. But like, I noticed that giving myself some flexibility in terms of how I like approach my own internal discipline has helped tremendously, because it takes you out of that rigid mental loop of perfectionism.
Right. I know Taleb has this thing where he said that he didn't write like his whole until like his 30s or something. And he said he didn't write because like procrastination is sometimes good. Like, you shouldn't be writing and trying to force something out without like having that emotional alignment where you're like, okay, I need to get this out of my head right now. I know it's a different topic, but it's kind of similar.
No, it's like, good. It's similar.
We try to create like this rigid schedule where I'm like, okay, every evening I'm going to write at least one paragraph, blah, blah, blah. But like, what are you going to write about if you don't have something to say or something about your life that needs to be written? So it's like, we see all this stuff online now where people are just like writing things that they don't even want to write. It's just like, you can tell immediately when something doesn't have life in it.
Mm. Yeah, but it's one of those things too, where like, you got to be careful with that. And I was talking to I was talking to Gordon about this too, because like, if you talk to Paul, you know, he'll tell you a lot about emotional alignment, which is great, you know. And I love Paul. You know, I spoke to him last week, but the thing is, I feel like so many people, especially from what it sounds like you and I, because it seems like you're kind of more on the impulsive side, and so am I. I'm definitely a pretty impulsive person. And especially if you're like self-medicating and shit like that, it's kind of easy to rationalize without even knowing it. Like, oh, I'm not going to do anything today because I don't feel emotionally aligned. And it's like,
right.
That's where it gets, you have to be careful, because if you don't define what emotional alignment means, you can just start rationalizing everything as oh, well, today I feel like, you know, jerking off 20 times and, you know, I don't feel like going to work. And next thing you know, it's like, you're backed into the corner and you're like, ah, I'm just emotionally aligned. Like,
emotionally aligned with the wrong thing.
Yeah. So, you know, I wonder what the limit is, like, in terms of where do you go, okay, I'm emotionally aligned, or maybe I'm not fully emotionally aligned, but like, I don't know. I've been trying to think of that.
Yeah, there's that famous writer, Stephen Pressfield.
I was just thinking about him. Go ahead.
Yeah, where he gives that story where he's like, until his 30s, he would try to sit down and write and do all this stuff. And then like late into his life, he hadn't published a book, maybe into his 40s or something. He had maybe tried to do one and never worked. And then he says, at least, I don't know, who knows if it's true, probably is, that he just started forcing himself to write every night, no matter what. Like, he just started to puke something out over and over again. And that's how he caught momentum. So even if he didn't want to write, he would just puke a couple hundred words out and just put it away. And the next day, come out, puke something out, whatever, puke it. I kind of do that with a journal. I have a bunch of fucking Moleskines. I think a lot of writers fucking fill out these notebooks all the time. And like, sometimes I'll write something and then, for example, I think I sent you that article I wrote about what it was like being a contractor.
Mm-hmm.
I was pondering a lot of that for a few months. And then at one point I was like, I just need to puke this thing out. And I talked to... I saw Nacho Oliveras was going to open that Antifragilista publication. And mm-hmm. I was like, even like before I wrote it, I pitched it to him. Or I think I wrote it before that and then I pitched it to him after, I forget. But it ended up working out. It was all right. It wasn't the best work, but it was, you kind of get an idea of what it's been like for me to survive for 8 months like this.
Mm.
And I had that shit stuck in my head for months, dude. And I just, one day I just decided to sit down and I puked out the whole thing. And then I didn't look at it for weeks. And then I saw Nacho post that thing and I was like, okay, I'm going to edit this thing and make it all right. And I just kept editing it and rewriting it and stuff like that. And eventually it came out into something readable.
Yeah. So I agree with Pressfield, man. I actually just purchased two more of his books last week and I'm a huge fan of him because I think he has the right idea, like, especially for certain types of people. Like, if you're the kind of person that, you know, doesn't have too many issues maybe or whatever, and you can somehow just get by like just using your intuition on everything, that's cool. But like, certain people need to, I think, sit down, like Pressfield says, and just overcome resistance. And I remember the first chapter of The War of Art where he was like, it's called What I Do. And that is my favorite fucking chapter of the whole book, because basically this is what he says. He's like, I get up in the morning I make my breakfast, I have my coffee, I shower, I make some calls if I need to. And then he says he has this whole ritual where he like puts on these like special shoelaces and all this shit, and he sits down to do his work. And he says he goes on for about 4 hours or so, or until he, and he knows that he's basically done when he like starts making a lot of typos or whatever. And he says that when he's done, he puts his USB drive in his car and basically just calls it a day. Office is closed. And he's like, do I worry about how many words I wrote? No. Do I worry about how good it was? No. All that matters is that I, for this day, for this session, I overcame resistance. And that hit me like a ton of bricks, because I was like, wow, that is such a cool mentality. And it took a lot of pressure off of me too for like learning coding, because, you know, for a long time, coding intimidated me. I would sit down and then I would do it for maybe half an hour and things are going okay. I'm solving problems. And next thing you know, I come across this roadblock. And then it's like, I'm putting all this pressure on myself to solve it, and I'm getting so frustrated. And then I'm like, fuck this. And I just get depressed and self-medicate and whatever. And now with the Stephen Pressfield mindset, it's like I sit down and then I just play around with it. But I tell myself, like, I'm going to do this for 4 hours. So I just do it for 4 hours. And then the whole time I'm doing it, I'm not criticizing myself how good I'm doing it. I'm not criticizing myself, like, how much work am I actually getting done in the end. But one thing I can say at the end of that four-hour session was that in one way or another, I fucking coded for 4 hours today. So you know what? I'm happy. And it's hard to maintain that mindset. God knows I have to journal a lot just to get all the negativity out of my fucking head, like all the perfectionism and all that. But man, I really like that kind of mentality. And that's where I think, you know, the emotional alignment thing is kind of dangerous. Cause if you take it too literally, you could think, oh, I can't like none of this is coming to me easily. And it's like, it doesn't have to come to you easily. Just sit down and just play with it. Learn how to like,
Right. He says like, you don't wait for the muse to come up. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, it's fine.
He's like, you don't wait for the muse to come up. When you sit down to write, you're inviting the muse to show up.
Yeah, exactly. He has a similar analogy, I think, where he says you kind of dig the holes in the ground and then the water flows. You know what I mean? Like you're digging those grooves into the canyon, and eventually the more you dig it in, the deeper it goes. Eventually the pressure can build up and now you have a whole stream. But you have to be there. You got to be digging. So I think there's a balance. I think like Paul has it right, but it's not a complete mentality to me. It seems like it's half baked. You know, it's like you took out the cake a little too early, because you still have to plant add the ingredient of like discipline in there somehow, in one way or another. It doesn't mean you have to torture yourself all day like some people. I don't know if you ever heard of David Goggins, but he's like crazy Navy SEAL. Like I love the guy. I mean, he's cool. I actually met him. I went to his affair, his event recently. He was doing a speech near my house, actually. And I got a book signed by him, and I really like him. But I think that he's another guy that's a little half-baked. Because he's like the opposite of Paul Portezi. You know, he's like all about just iron torture discipline. All his videos are like, you have to suffer. You have to suffer. That's all he says. And I'm like, man, but what if you're just not emotionally aligned at all, like, and you're just torturing yourself? I don't like that too much.
Yeah, that kind of this kind of brings to mind too, when I had like my eating struggles with bad food and whatever, like the only way I've been able to get out of it actually is because I go to the small meat shop every week, once a week, and I get a full load for the whole week. And that's kind of kept me from eating bad food outside, because I don't buy any bad food and bring it home. If I'm going to eat bad food, I'll eat it when I'm outside. But that helped me a lot, actually, having that system where I already know what I'm going to eat throughout the week. If you look at my Twitter, every week I post like this giant slow cooker stew that I make. Mm-hmm. And that feeds me for a few days, and I'm like experimenting with different vegetables and lamb, different broths, different types of meats and all this stuff. And that's what's helped me stay away from the bad food, because whenever you show up to your house and your fridge is empty, or if you're out in the real world and you didn't prepare your breakfast and your lunch for the day or whatever, it's very easy to walk into Subway or into Tim Hortons and eat the industrial goo.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I stay completely away from it. Like, I just went to McDonald's the other night and I was like, I feel like having an ice cream. And I took my girlfriend to buy a fucking ice cream. I was like, fuck it. But like, I can happily say that, happily say now that like 90% of my diet is like clean. And it's because that one day a week where I go buy all the stuff and I've made this friendship with a small business owner who has like the most high quality food ever, dude. Like, I don't even want to go to the supermarket anymore because the prices are the same, but the quality is so much better. He brings a lot of local stuff from around the province here, and like just helping a small business that I've gotten to know for the past 8 months also entices me to go there more often. Like, sometimes like I'm like, okay, I'm going to go down to Superstore, which is closer to my house. And I'm like, nah, fuck it. I'm going to help this small business. My buddy, Dennis, shout out Dennis, all natural and exotic meats in North Vancouver, BC. If you're ever in there, go see him, dude. He has the best steak. Mm. I just had a steak for lunch today, dude. And same price as Superstore, but it looks like way more natural. It tastes way better. It doesn't have like that pink toxin that's put into every, if you go to like a supermarket, apparently they dye meat so it looks better.
Mm.
So I don't know. That's something I've learned. Like, so I always tell people, like, just go buy that big load of food once a week. And now I have like a standard breakfast that I mix up. But like, I have this habit now where like I wake up in the morning, I turn off the coffee pot and I turn on the stove and I cook the breakfast. Or sometimes I'll fast till like fucking lunch or the whole day just for fun. I'm like, yeah, let's see how long I can go. And then I'll eat a massive meal. Like, just like, there's a bit of volatility there in the emotional alignment, but there's also a structure I have in place that keeps me away from the industrial goo lord.
Exactly, man. That's I think that's the main sort of like idea here. Like, if you go too far down the rigidity road and you every single meal is predetermined and all that, then it's easy to actually fall off and like go into a horrible downward spiral, especially if you're the kind of person that believes that this is the way life needs to be. It needs to be pre-planned and extremely deliberate, and you need to be disciplined and follow the outline. If you have that mentality and then you get depressed because you're eating the same shit for 2 weeks and then you just binge on freaking ice cream for 3 days out of sheer depression and misery, you're gonna hate your life. I mean, that's what I've been through many, many times. And then you have the other side of the thing where it's like, I'm just gonna have like a completely volatile food schedule all the time and just eat whenever I want to, whenever I'm hungry and whatever I feel like. And it's like, now you're getting dangerous. Now you're getting real freaking dangerous. So I think, you know, it sounds like you've definitely improved a lot, which is awesome, man. Glad to hear. And yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like you got more of the right idea going. For sure.
Yeah, and I think like definitely, so another thought I had was like, sometimes you need those rock bottom moments to like break out of your shit. So like, maybe you're suffering a bit, but you're like, you have like a low level suffering or something, like you have less incentive to like try to break out and try to do something different. Like, sometimes like I felt like that rock bottom moment I had last year where I like had a mental breakdown and stopped going to this office and whatever. I think it was honestly, now when it first happened, I was freaking out and I was like, wow, I can't believe I just did that, whatever. And now I look back on it and I'm like, you know what? That was actually very valuable to my life because it gave me a bit of space to like try to figure out what the fuck's wrong with my life and also try to experiment with new things. Cause like, I don't know, I guess if you get stuck in that comfort zone a bit, it's very easy to get complacent. Like, even recently I've been getting a little bit complacent and I'm like, I need that fire to cause me to go hunt again. Cause like, otherwise I'm just going to stay at fucking home and do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Wait, would you say you went to a doctor? Or something?
No. What did I say?
Like I was rock bottom or whatever.
Yeah. When I quit that office job last year, I felt like it was rock bottom. I was like embarrassed. I was like, because I just walked out and never went back.
Oh.
And I was like stuck at home for a month. And then at one point, like survival instinct kicked in and I was like, dude, I need to go make some money or something. Like, I can't just sit here and mope around all the fucking time. And so what I'm trying to say is like that rock bottom moment, if you can withstand it for a bit, let it pass, like at some point you're going to have to jump into action and figure shit out.
Right. So do you live like alone or?
I live with two roommates right now in North Van, in the suburbs of Vancouver, where there was a coronavirus death yesterday or the day before. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. What do you think? You work for an ambulance, dude. Like, are you at risk? Are you thinking at all? Like, hey, maybe I should take some time off for the next month or so.
Yeah. I actually went through like the past 2 days where that was a big thought on my mind, big concern. And I spoke to some people about it. Part of the Taleb circle. I don't know if you know Dig Vijoy.
Yeah. I follow him. I don't think he knows who I am, but I follow him.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. I met up with him a few times in New York, and he told me, like, dude, you should stay home, like, ask your parents for money or whatever if you need to, but this is kind of an emergency, and I think he's sort of right. But for the one thing, there are some, there's like, I don't know, like, I don't know, maybe 10 or 20 cases of it in New York right now, which is only an hour and a half from me. So it's, you know, it's there. And there's some cases in PA where I live, Pennsylvania. There's maybe 3 or 4 cases in Pennsylvania. So it's definitely around. But the thing is, like, you know, if I don't go to work for the next week or two, it's like I'm going to have to start dipping into savings. And, like, I really don't have that much savings. So psychologically, it's gonna be a fucking burden, man, like just sitting there and just wasting my cash, like,
mm-hmm.
So I think that what I'm gonna do as of now is I'm gonna probably hustle for like the next 2 weeks or something and just build up a decent chunk of change and like and then try to really decrease my expenses for the next 2 weeks, like not spending money on, you know, going out or anything like that. And then depending on how bad it is in like a week or two, then I can be like, okay, now I have some more psychological freedom of like, all right, maybe I'll take this week off or the next 2 weeks off or whatever and just see what's going on. Because it is a risk. You know, I'm definitely in and out of hospitals all the time. So
do you feel at all like a duty, since you work for like an emergency, you're probably going to be valuable on the battle lines. Do you feel at all like a duty to stick around and like, I don't want to be cruel or anything, be like a martyr or something if shit blows up, like, and help people? Like,
I don't know, like, I don't think it's, I haven't really asked myself that question too much. Like, as far as I'm concerned, 90% of calls are kind of stupid. Like, 911 calls, a lot of them are kind of dumb. You know, it's really just a small percentage of them that are actually important, like people having heart attacks, but a lot of them are like just people falling and shit, which is, you know, important, but I'm not gonna like put my life on the line to do that all the time. So yes and no, you know, like it depends on the situation. Like if in 3 months it got really bad and they just needed people on the front line and they were gonna give us all the right equipment and make sure that we were gonna be fine, like maybe I'd do it. But if it's like there's a high fucking chance, it's like, no, I have to look out for myself and my freaking family and friends first. I mean, like, as much as I want to be a good part of the community, I'm not going to, you know, not to some crazy extent. No, I don't feel that.
Yeah. Sometimes I worry about like the nursing community. I have a bunch of friends who's like parents. My mom works for a doctor at one of the main hospitals in Vancouver. She raises her kid. She's a early childhood educator for their, like, at home for them. Mm-hmm. So I was like asking her, like, are you worried at all? Like, this doctor that you work with was sick the other day and she works at a hospital. I'm like, are you worried about this at all? You've got respiratory problems. Like, but I don't know. Some people are just going to roll the dice and see what happens, unless we end up like Italy and get quarantined. And I don't know, dude. I have no idea what to believe.
Talk about,
yeah. Like what I'm seeing in Italy right now looks fucked. People are starting to like post like, you guys need to take serious. You need to take this serious. And they're like telling you, like, I saw one post today that was like, hospitals are having to decide like who they cut off now, who they let live or die. I was like, okay, this is getting dark, dude.
Where, in China?
No, in Italy, dude.
Oh, in Italy. Fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I saw that and I was like, Jesus. And my friend sent me this dark video, dude, about China, and they were like burying all these domesticated animals like pigs and birds and chicks and stuff from like farms. It was like a video of China burying them to kill the virus, apparently. So you just see like this mass grave of animals. I was like, dude, I need to get off the internet. This is too.
Yeah. I don't know,
yeah,
man.
Dude, I just got offered some work next week outside of the computer, and I'm like questioning whether I should take it.
I mean, what's the risk of exposure? Like, what is it, like a job where you're just by yourself, or like, what's the risk?
It's building offices across Vancouver, so I have no idea where I'm going until the day before. It could be like at a major bank downtown in the center of the city. It could be a school in the middle of fucking nowhere. And they just offered me the work this week, and I'm like, I'm starting to think that I need some manual labor because I've been on my computer for like a month writing, and I'm getting kind of, I need a little bit of a mix up. But then I'm thinking like, what if, okay, so people here are saying that the virus is about to blow up in Vancouver. We already had a death. There's already cases of community transmission. Should I be taking public transit to downtown to offices to go to work in the next month? I'm like,
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, from my perspective, it seems like I'm on the same boat as you. Like, I need fucking money, and I'm not, well, I don't know how much you're making from your computer, but I'm definitely not making anything from my computer. So it's just, I just remember like the depression and shit I went through last freaking, like in 2019, and how shitty I felt when I was making no money at all and like relying on my parents for everything. It sucked. And I really don't want to have to go through that again. So I'm definitely considering, like I said, rolling the dice a little bit. Maybe that's where you're at, but I don't know.
Like right now, like,
yeah.
Right now I can make enough money on my computer to cover my bills, but not enough to save money. And I like saving money. My girlfriend and I had plans to travel this summer, maybe go live in Japan or Mexico or something, but with the virus everywhere in Japan, it's even got into Mexico, it's in Spain. Like, I don't know what the fuck I should do, whether...
Yeah. I don't know, man. Fuck. It's definitely a tough one, man. A lot of people like that are living paycheck to paycheck are having that same concern right now. And so I don't know, man.
Yeah, I'm kind of happy I have this lifeline now where if something does happen, I have stuff to write about like Monday to Friday usually. So
yeah, that's cool. I mean, that you have an online gig like that is definitely awesome. I wish I had that, because if I did, I think I'd probably say, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to like sit home for the next 2 months and like just see what happens, because I think maybe if I were you, I'd probably just sit home. Yeah, I think that's what I do.
And yeah, that's what I'm leaning to right now.
Yeah, just try to do some push-ups and shit at home so you're not, you know.
Oh yeah, dude, I walk around like I think I send you a link to Guru. You probably follow Guru Anaerobic.
Yeah.
I've read a bunch of his shit, and I just like, I'll walk around with weights up and down my apartment and do like push-ups. I'll do pull-ups off the door, and I'll try to like pretend I'm lifting furniture at my other job. Right. Shit like that.
Yeah. I think that's something I do a lot. Like when I work, I do half an hour of sitting down, and then I get up for 10 minutes and I walk all around the house, and I have dumbbells, I have a kettlebell, I do squats, push-ups, sit-ups, yoga, go to the backyard. It's finally starting to warm up around here, so now I can actually go for a walk around the neighborhood. So I'll do all that, which is great. It's definitely a good thing to do. And I'm assuming in the office, you didn't really have much of an opportunity to do that, or without looking like the weird guy that's doing push-ups every 20 minutes.
No, dude, I was the weird guy who walked out frustrated every day and smoked every 30 minutes. I'd pump something out and then I'd go outside and smoke. And I was the only one going in and out to smoke. And then slowly throughout my time, I started showing up later and later because it was like a tech company where that allows you to do your own schedule. People still do 9 to 5 and whatever, but at first I was showing up like 8 in the morning, then 9 in the morning, then 10, and then towards the end I'd like show up after dude and stuff like that. And I was just like, what the fuck am I doing?
But how did the other people do it? Like, it seems like, by the way you're describing it, you were the only one that was like, fuck this. But it seems like the other
people, it wasn't
people
that bad.
Yeah.
Other people, I don't know, like writing, I don't know. To me, it felt like I was writing term papers all the time because I had these big projects that I had to write for big Silicon Valley companies. So there was a bunch of money on the line. The only incentive and upside I had was my salary. Like if I delivered something early enough or if it was good enough or whatever, like I didn't get a financial windfall out of it. So at first I was like, cool, yeah, I can pump these things out. But then it's just slowly, like I had just these deadlines on my mind all the time. Whereas the job I have right now, I'm writing news, and I just, once I'm done throughout the day, sometimes it drags into the second day if I need to get sources from somebody or quotes from different companies when they want to comment. But it doesn't drag on for weeks at a time and like phone calls for weeks at a time, and there isn't like crazy money on the line. We're just writing news, for fuck's sake.
Right. So maybe like so you were having some issues, I guess, dealing with like the that whole aspect of it, like the pressure aspect.
Yeah, and then like also like having spending your, man, I don't think it's healthy for people to spend 8 hours a day with like 20 tabs open, reading. I'm doing that right now a little bit, but at least like I'm done sooner. And I don't have to take transit and all this stuff. But dude, I was just like way too plugged into the internet. And sometimes I would waste the whole day, and then I would get home and I would feel the pressure to hit a deadline, and I would write at night. And I was just like, what am I doing, dude? And my leg would like start shaking, and just I would wake up before my alarm and these deadlines would start talking in my head. And I was just like, dude, I'm literally going crazy. So yeah. I don't know if like I just wasn't aligned with like the office life or what. Maybe I could try it again. I have no idea how I would react to it.
Like, I was going to say, yeah, it's, I forgot what I was going to say, but basically, yeah, I mean, that it's a whole skill set to be able to deal with that kind of stuff. Like, even as an EMT, like, it kind of stresses me out still, because I just became one. So, you know, and to be honest, the program for, like, learning, the class that basically gets you certified was a lot of like PowerPoint just bullshit, and I hate PowerPoints with a passion. And I was the weird guy that like had to get up every 20 minutes, and I did pickups in the back of the class just to stay awake, because I just couldn't. I hate just sitting there for 3 hours and listening to a PowerPoint. So long, like basically, is I didn't really learn as well as I could have, and now I'm learning, like, but on the job. And it's right. hard to learn this kind of stuff when there's literally a fucking guy having a seizure in front of you. So my solution for that is I minimize my work days. So basically I'll do like 2 or 3 days a week of that. And the shifts are kind of long. They're like 12 hours. And then I'll do wheelchair work on the side to kind of like have more relaxed days. So those days I'll still do the driving. And the cool thing is that it's the same company, so you get paid the same amount. So you're driving. So I got a little bit of an increase in my salary for driving the wheelchairs. But during those days, it's like very calm, because you're literally just picking people up and dropping them off. So I'll relax on those days. And then I'll have like the more stressful days, you know, when I do that. So I think what I was going to say is, like, when you're doing that kind of job, are your managers like making sure that you're writing all the fucking time, 8 hours a day? Or do you have leeway in terms of like, can you express to them, like, you know, listen, I only, like, my peak productivity is between this time and this time, and I need to balance it out with this and this kind of routine. Like, is there any room for that kind of stuff? Or
there was definitely room, and I just handle it bad. Like, I was just like not in a good mental state. Like, I let my mind override me. Like all the ranting and like complaining and stuff like that. Like, I feel like right now, if I had that job right now, I'm in a much better state to handle stuff like that. But I don't know. There was just something about that. It was in the middle of winter. It was fucking raining all the time. Like, Vancouver is so gloomy during the winter. And my diet was horrendous, dude. Like, it just had a lot. And then, like I said, I was like using booze and party drugs on the side, and like, that's not a good all those things are not good chemistry to show up on Monday and deal with professional stress.
Definitely not. Yeah,
sometimes I'm like, right now I could probably handle it way better, because I have a better system of staying healthy and like working out and eating and stuff like that. Like, I'm like, maybe I could have handled it better. Now
it's definitely a worthwhile question, I think, you know, because you got to be honest with yourself about these kinds of things. Because, you know, I was thinking about this quite a bit recently, because it's like, sometimes I stress myself out too. Like, I'll come home and I'll work on my programming stuff, and I'll work myself up into a pretty stressed out state. And then I have to remind myself, and I'm like, dude, you're just setting your own schedule. Like, relax. Why are you so worked up for? and then I wonder, like, how the hell do other people do this shit? Like, how do entrepreneurs start these multi-million dollar businesses? How does Trump at 70 something years old all of a sudden become the president? How do all these like programmers that are like these nerdy little dudes that play video games all the time handling these like big projects and making all this money and doing this and doing that? And I ask myself that, and I just tell myself, like, it's not that the pressure is too much for these people. It's just that they just handle it better somehow. You know, they have better mental habits for handling the pressure. So it's not like the pressure is too great for you, I don't think. It's just that the way that you deal with it is just not skillful. You know, it's basically like riding a bike. Like, if your bike is crappy and the tire is all messed up, like, you're going to have a bumpy, freaking annoying ride and it's going to suck. But if you like improve your wheels and you improve the pedals and you maybe work out your legs more and make sure you get rest and recovery, all of a sudden you're just fucking flying. So I think it's worthwhile to consider, like, how do you, and maybe that's a good topic too, like, how do you deal with stress these days now? Like, what do you do to de-stress? What do you do to relax? What do you do, like, when you feel tense? You know, how do you get rid of that now?
Before I say that, something came to mind. I think the number one thing that caused that crash too was that, back to emotional alignment, I never liked the work. I wasn't into showing data points and stuff. I've always been like a narrative writer and I like talking to people and stuff, but most of the job was me researching data and presenting it in like an infographic manner and all these, like, instead of like having an opinion on something slightly or trying to push towards a certain angle, a lot of it was like, here it is, I'm presenting it to you. And I was just like, some people like writing like that, some people like I don't know, maybe if you're like a scientist or something. I remember that I was like, I just don't like the work. I think that was the number one narrative rolling in my head. I was just like, I just don't like doing this. I don't want to do this. I remember going to my mom. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And she's like, why don't you just quit then? Yeah. And I was like, I can't. I just made the middle class. My friends think I'm in the middle class now, whatever.
Right.
But addressing the other thing, dealing with stress right now, a lot of reading, audiobooks. I go and play basketball. There's basketball court that's next to my house. A lot of bicycling. Dude, physical exercise is like the number one thing. And that's why I love the manual labor world, because it was just hard to be. I don't know. I had some stressful days in that world, especially when I worked with companies I didn't like. But there was one company that I always liked the group I was working with, and it was just always pleasant. And you get that pump when you come home from lifting stuff all day. That was a good way to like not have a stressful day. Right now, I'm feeling a little bit tired in my head from consuming so much content and having to write a lot. And usually that's actually brought in a bit of bad habits, like having beers after work that I probably shouldn't be, if unless I'm like hanging out with somebody. Like, you should probably shouldn't be drinking alone, having a beer or two. It's not the end of the world, but like, it's like heading to that old road that I used to deal with.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I think reading is like the number one thing I do. I'm like, I have a lot of audiobooks. I started reading Montaigne. Michel de Montaigne, after I saw it. I don't know if that's how you say it. And he is so fascinating because, like, I'm reading his essays and they're from 400 years ago. And this guy's dealing with the same fucking problems we were just talking about. Like, all sorts of philosophical things that, like, they didn't have cell phones back then. They didn't have vehicles. They rode around on horses and they had a bunch of fucking wars going on all the time around them. Small warfare between, like, people seizing castles and stuff like that. Sieges. But this guy's writing, he's just dealing with a lot of the same problems we deal with and a lot of the same philosophical topics. And I think Taleb said, if there's anybody you should read in the classics, it was him. So I started reading. It's like my bedtime thing. Right before bed, I'll read one of his essays or two. And that usually I'm like, oh, my problems aren't that bad, dude. This guy had the same fucking problems. I'll go to bed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, and by the way, yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to make it sound like, you know, that you're, that from my perspective, the only issue you were going through was stress or anything. But, and yeah, maybe, you know, the work was the main factor in your situation. But it's just true though. Like, it's worth considering sometimes how stress, you know, like, not a lot of people have good stress management systems, period. Like, most people don't, you know, and And I think that's huge. I think it's really important to really to learn how to develop those stress management systems, you know, internally. And it's something that's very difficult because, like, people have a very poor relationship to pain. You know, something I always think about is, how do I change how I view pain? How can I see pain differently? How can I relate to pain differently? How can I process pain differently? And there's a lot of ways to do it. But one way that I've found that really works is that I can take pain, but like not for a very long time. You know, I can take high degrees of stress, but for short durations. And that's how I adapt. And eventually, if I do that enough, then I can take it for longer periods of time. And that's kind of what I said I was doing with like the EMT work, like working on an ambulance 2 or 3 times a week isn't horrible. It gives me a lot of recovery time to process everything, you know, so I can only imagine how it is for like soldiers in war that are like in the shit for months at a time. You know, it makes sense why a lot of them come back all screwed up. But imagine they went to war for like a week and then came back for a month and really had the time to process it, to journal about it, to talk to their fellow, you know, warriors about it, to do some yoga, to do some nature connection. And then they go back to war. And it's like, I could see that as being a way better way of doing it. And that's why I was asking you, like, what are the different ways you can kind of, you know, play around with it? Because I'm sure, like, or maybe not, but what do you think of this? Like, what if you took on freelancing work in a similar domain where you basically did a lot of this technical writing, which maybe is what you're doing now, but like, I feel like based on what we just spoke about, maybe you could potentially just handle it way better if you just had to do it for less time. It may be like, you know, doing it every day is like too much, but if you did it twice a week, maybe you can make more money and like, maybe you'd even enjoy it more. Cause I can enjoy like working on an ambulance, but if it's like for a short period of time, after 3 days of dealing with sick people that are like puking and shit, I'm like, fuck these people, you know? But like on day one, it's like, cool, you know, I'm learning new skills, I'm helping people. And
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And just to finish that idea, it's also interesting how like I've had this with my friends sometimes. Like I love my friends. Like I die for my friends. But there's times where I hang out with my friends every day for like 2 weeks. And then after a while, I can't stand them anymore. You know, like I'm just like, holy shit, I need a break from this guy or whatever, right? And then I take a break and I do my own thing for a week. And all of a sudden I'm like, man, I can't wait to hang out with my friends. Like, so, you know, that could also happen, you know.
It's like all on our dopamine hamster wheel.
Yeah.
It's like after a while you just stop getting the dopamine hit from whatever you're doing, whether it's your friends or your work or your activities, and then you just need to... There's that guy on Twitter, Cameron Seppa, who's like a psychologist doctor. I think he's the one who coined the term dopamine fasting, and he's like, every weekend you should at least have one day, and maybe like once a day even have an hour where you are not connected to any dopamine feeding, just like being with yourself, maybe reading a difficult book or something that like you want to give your dopamine receptors a break, dude. Because yeah, even like right now I'm just on Twitter all fucking day and I'm just like, what am I doing, dude? I'm reverting back to the craziness I experienced last year. Like,
yeah, dude, that's why I have three phones. I have my regular iPhone, and then I have a flip phone, which is like an old shitty flip phone I can't do anything with except call. And I have only two people or three people know the number for it, maybe four, like emergency contact only, like my parents and like two close friends, and that's it. Nobody else has that fucking number. And what I'll do a lot of times is I'll go on, like, I'll do the wheelchair driving. So, and I'll take my flip phone. So the whole day, all I'm doing is just driving. And maybe I'll take two books with me in my bag and I'll have the flip phone. That's it. So the whole day, I'm not listening to audiobooks. I'm not listening to music. I'm not interacting on Twitter. I'm not texting anybody because I hate texting on the flip phone. It takes forever just to send like, hi. I got to press fucking number 2 6 times to get to the H. So, and I'll do that. And I'll do that sometimes for 2 or 3 days at a time. And I'll only check my notifications at night when I get home. and I'll check it one time just to respond to people that are waiting on me. And it's annoying for them because they're like, why is this guy taking forever to respond? But to me, it feels amazing because like after 2 or 3 days of doing that, it's like magical. My mind feels so refreshed and I have all these deep thoughts because when you have no stimulation for that long, like you're doing 8 hours of driving all day, and I'll get out and I'll like do squats and pushups and keep make sure my blood is flowing too. So it's not like I'm stagnant. But like, yeah, after 2 or 3 days of that, where for 8 hours a day, you're just sitting with your flip phone. I mean, I get some really, really deep thinking done. And I'll bring my journal too, and I'll write down a lot of ideas. And it's been a great little practice that I've been doing.
I've done a similar thing before, actually. I did it last summer for a month where I was working manual labor and I put a child block on my iPhone where there was no infinite content app. So no browser, no Twitter. It was I turned it into a dumb phone with Google Maps, maybe text messages. And then I gave my mom the password and then I couldn't download apps. I couldn't do anything like that. And I even went as far as blocking the browsers on my computer as well. And you're right. Same thing as you said. It just opens like this window of like, Jesus Christ. Like I could do other things. I could, you have more room to think your own thoughts. And like, I feel like when I'm on Twitter too much, I start thinking other people's thoughts. Like they start becoming like a virus in your mind and you start thinking like they do. And I'm like, I need to figure out what the hell I want to think about first and what like curiosities I have rather than following the dopamine hamster wheel all the time. So now that you bring this up, actually, I did a podcast like in October where I talked to a journalist in Colombia and we talked about the same thing right now, how we need to get the fuck off Twitter. But journalism is just like, you almost have to be on Twitter to see what the fuck is going on each day.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think if coronavirus wasn't here right now, I might consider doing a bunch of manual labor for the next month and going offline. That'd be, especially if spring's about to hit Vancouver. It's about to be like, sorry, we use Celsius here.
It's fine. I understand Celsius.
Yeah, it's going to be over 10 degrees and sunny next week. And I'm like, oh, let's go.
Right now
it's rainy and it'd be cool. I just got addicted to playing basketball again. Here's another addiction.
Well, it's a good addiction.
I've been going to the basketball court and just shooting hoops and playing with like fucking teenagers and shit, balling out. And that's one way to de-stress, dude. Like, it just, I'll leave my phone at home. Sometimes I'll take my fucking phone with me. I'm lying, but but when I don't take my phone with me and I go to the basketball court and spend 2 hours there, it's like a mental refresh. Plus the endorphins.
Definitely, man.
I had a question for you, actually. Since you work as an EMT, it's on ambulances, I assume.
Yeah.
Do you guys have a big, like, are you guys dealing with the opioid crisis over there?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because we have, in Vancouver, we're like one of the hot spots in the world, dude. When I worked in tourism once, I had to call an ambulance for an old lady. And the ambulance wouldn't show up for like over half an hour. And I kept calling them. She had just fallen or she fainted or something. But they were just busy dealing with overdoses, dude. Like, is that what your day looks like? And there's stories here of ambulance and emergency workers and firefighters that all they're doing in Vancouver, dude, is dealing with overdoses, coming with naloxone and trying to resuscitate people. And I've had it happen to friends of mine where they've like had to save somebody's life. And they had to call an ambulance. And then the guy who's on drugs, he's like, what are you doing? Why did you get me out of that? Like, just leave me alone, whatever. It's just like a dark spot in our city. Like, what are you guys dealing with over there? I know it's rampant in the United States as well.
Yeah, dude. It's not as bad because I'm in a small town. So,
okay.
You know, we actually do have a pretty big opiate problem in this town as well. I'm basically an hour and a half away from Philadelphia and an hour and a half away from New York City. I'm like right in between. So maybe, like in bigger cities, it could be more like constant. I've actually had, recently, I can't give any obviously details, but I could say, for instance, I had a overdose where it was like this young girl and then, she almost died. We get there and everything. And then, you know, we gave her the Narcan and we call it Narcan. And then, a few weeks later, the same girl overdoses again and we go to the same freaking place again. And, you know, and like, yeah, it's definitely a pretty big problem here. It happens probably few times a week. So it's not, maybe it's not constantly all day long, but like it depends on the city too.
Yeah, we have an area in downtown Vancouver called the Downtown East Side, which is like notorious for this. Mm-hmm. Like tourists come here and they get freaked out when their tour bus has to go through the area. And they're like, how can this be? How can your city, the one of the most beautiful, most expensive, most livable cities in the world, how do you guys tolerate this shit? And it's just like, Canada has some really sketchy history where like we used to like imprison Aboriginal people in like schools trying to convert them to Christianity like as late as the 1990s, dude. Mm. Like, some kind of dystopian shit, and like a lot of the aftermath and a lot of like mental institutions that have had to close and stuff like that, all that aftermath of people are on the streets now. And like being a port city as well, we have quick access to China. Apparently a lot of the fentanyl and carfentanil is coming from China, the opioids and whatever, and it's just a problem we've never been able to solve. But there's like some cool programs here where they're doing like a needle program or places where people can go use drugs and like they can try to help you wean off, and they like respect you. Like maybe you still need to continue using drugs for the next month, but they'll help you like do it in a safe manner and show you like different ways to like, get out of it and try to fix your life instead of like throwing you in fucking prison for a year and then you come out again and then you're back into the same loop. So I think that's kind of I know a lot of people say like it's like a dark spot on all our cities and we just need to wipe it out, like San Francisco and stuff like that. But we also need to like create these avenues where people have like, people are treated with a bit of compassion on their way out. And I interviewed a journalist actually on like my fifth episode of the podcast, and he used to be a journalist and now he works for this, church organization that helps people. They just have a center where people can go every day and they help you. And he's just telling me stories like, we have helped people who you think are done. Like they are not a part of society anymore. They should just be wiped out. And we have successfully helped them change their lives. Like you look at this one patient and across a year, you see a completely different person. Like these people, I know we want to leave them left behind. We want them out of sight and whatever, but these people can be changed, can be helped is what he loves to say. These people can change. They can become better people. They can recover, all these things. So I don't know if you guys have that. I know the US has a bit of a militant prison program.
Yeah. I think we have like the most prisoners in the entire world.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, a little bit of that is coming out of Vancouver now. There's a lot of that kind of... I mentioned that doctor too who like is trying to say that these people are self-medicating because they have problems and they're alone. Like, what would you do if you were alone and nobody loved you and you were left on the street and you had no housing and no food, and then there's a guy with drugs right next to you? Like, what do you think you would do? Like, there's stories of professionals here who start using, like people who you wouldn't expect, people with families, like... Sorry, long rant, but no, that's what we're dealing with here.
Yeah. No, I totally agree, man. I think it's kind of like, you know, what happened with like the binging for me. Like, you know, it's basically heroin on a low dose. It's the same fucking thing. It's trying to numb yourself and escape into a land where everything is nice and pretty. You know, it's the same thing that you do when, you know, when you go on Netflix or whatever. Like, it's the same shit. You're eating something, which is basically just a way to stimulate a certain neurotransmitter in your mind. And then you're watching something on YouTube or Netflix or whatever, which is another way to stimulate another dopamine or whatever receptor in your mind. Because you're watching, you know, I used to watch like all these compilations and comedy and this and that. And I'd be eating ice cream and it's like dopamine, serotonin, novelty, you know, constant novelty, constantly being able to change from one video to another, you know. It's basically heroin or crack or whatever you want to call it, just on a lower form. And I definitely, you know, a big part of breaking out of that has been like compassion, just being compassionate towards myself, putting less pressure on myself. Like a lot of the misery I went through was because I used to put unreal pressure on myself, but I used to do it in a way that was just stupid. There's actually ways to put pressure on yourself that are smart. Like you have to apply pressure in the right places. It's like if you want to draw on a or paint on a canvas, you don't just take the brush and just fucking smash it through the canvas to paint on it. You have to apply the right amount of pressure so that you can create the right strokes, and then eventually it creates like a beautiful picture. But I used to just stab the fucking canvas and wonder why the painting used to look like shit. You know, I used to put all this stupid pressure on myself. I had very poor methods of acquiring success, acquiring skills, learning. My methods were very primitive because nobody ever really taught me all this shit. And then I'd get depressed when I wasn't making the progress I wanted to in the amount of time that my ego wanted me to. So once I finally freaking like understood, like, you know what, dude? Success is going to come, but it's not going to come the way you think it is. Or I know you want all these things, but you don't have the right methods to get them or whatever. And I started becoming honest about it and becoming compassionate towards myself about it. Like, dude, you're a good guy. You know, you have all these great intentions for what you want to do, for what you want to accomplish and this and that. But you need to slow down. You need to learn. You need to humble yourself. And it's okay that you have all these flaws. It's okay that you have all these bad habits. You grew up in a certain situation where you weren't – how the hell are you supposed to know all this shit? You're not going to just be born with all this knowledge, you know, so it's okay. Just take it easy, you know, and I started applying that self-compassion, and eventually I started little by little just ending that, you know, and ending the binges, ending all that. And now it happens very, very rarely. Like, I don't even have to worry about it too much, although I still have to stay vigilant and humble about it, because the second I start saying, oh yeah, I'm done, I'm cured, everything's fine, like, that's when you get too arrogant, and then next thing you know, you're back to it. But I definitely have to stay vigilant about it. But I agree, man. I think that that's exactly what these people are going through, man, like these drug addicts. So it's easy to get all militant about it and be like, they're just fucking losers. All they have to do is say no to the drugs and all their problems would be solved. And it's like, yeah, way easier said than done. Like, you have no idea how fucking miserable these people are, man. So I think what Canada is doing, like you said, with you know, where they actually allow you to do heroin, but in a safe environment, and little by little try to wean you off, I think that's the smartest fucking thing I've heard so far.
Yeah, the government doesn't even promote it yet. It's a bunch of like civil disobedient organizations who do it on their own. I think there might be one place that just got the green light in the last few years, but a lot of it is people who live on the streets and they made it out, and they're like, I know what we're doing is not working, and I'm just going to fucking open this place anyways, and whether the government likes it or not. And then the government usually doesn't do that much about it, because then they start hearing good stories about it, and then they just like kind of allow it to happen. So it's kind of like a decentralized localist thing.
Cool.
It's not like a centralist government thing telling you what to do and how to survive and whatever. But it definitely needs to spread more, because I went out to some small towns like a few hours from Vancouver. And a lot of our industries out there, like lumber yards and mills and stuff like that, are shutting down. And what's available to people if you live in a small town? What are you going to do? Work at 7-Eleven? You just see for miles and miles, you see Tim Hortons, Starbucks, 7-Eleven. All these major brands are moving in. And like those are the jobs that are available. And it's just like... Ugh. So in those types of places, you'd want to have like this localist vibe where they're small business people working together, but it's all becoming Canada's like very corporatized. It's very, I like going to South America because there's still like people are poor down there and whatever, but there's still a lot of small businesses and people just hustling on the street and they're fucking around, and there's just like way more mixed businesses all over the place. In Canada, it's just like a corporate monolith place. There's small business here, don't get me wrong, but we're kind of trending the wrong way, kind of like the US too in major cities. I'm sure you get a little bit of that as well.
Yeah.
But you guys have a big entrepreneurial freedom culture there.
Yeah, you know, we do to some degree. But there's also that, there's a huge element of what you just said. Like, especially where I am, like I said, small town, there's, you know, there's farms around, you know, we have a lot of fields and things like that. It's kind of like rural and suburban mixed. And, you know, that's what you see everywhere. That's actually, it literally hurts me when I think about this too much, like to think about the US and how much potential it has and everything. And then you go around state to state and it's like, it's the same fucking shit. And now it sounds like Canada is the same. Like,
yeah,
Starbucks, dude, it's turning into like McDonald's and the stupid Walmart strip mall or whatever. And it's the same shit everywhere you go. And it's like, ew, you know?
It's like a corporate serfdom.
Yeah, it's just no
class. We're all just like serfs to these corporations now. Like, there's so many regulations here in Canada. Like, I was looking at what it would take for me to just open a little tour bus company where I just drove one bus around the city. And there was, I was just looking at the page, and there's just, obviously, if I had the will to do it, I could pull it off. But I would have to go into so much debt and pay all these different licenses and all this crazy shit. And I'm like, I have to do all of that before I even try to test this business, whether it's going to work or not. Like, I'm going to have to go into all this crazy amount of debt before I can test this shit out. Like,
kills entrepreneurship.
Kills it, yeah. And then, so what happens? Most of the industries where you'd want to test something like this is corporate dominated. Four major players. Dude, we just legalized marijuana here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was easier to get weed before it was legalized. Now it's like there's like four companies vying to control the entire supply chain in Canada and all of retail, and the government's like allowing it. Some provinces are better than others because each province has a different mandate. But the general trend is they want to go for this oligopoly system like we have with our cell phones, with fucking food and restaurants. It's so hard to open a food truck here. Like, what I love about South America when I was there is there's so much variety of street food. Here, like, you have to invest like $100,000 to open a fucking food truck and get all the licenses. The government tells you where you can park, where you can serve food, which restaurant you can be close to. If you have like a, let's say you had a mobile Japanese restaurant for some reason, you're not allowed to park near a Japanese restaurant or other stuff. So they do like all these things to protect business and at the same time protect sanitary things. But at the same time, like, if I had a restaurant or something and you got sick, you wouldn't come back. So like, why do we need all these restrictive things? Like, if my restaurant is, if my little food stand is selling healthy food on the street and I don't have a license and nobody's getting sick and everybody loves it, why does the government need to be involved in this? Maybe I'm a little bit too libertarian. Some people might not agree with this, but whatever.
Nah, man. I think Taleb says it like right. He says small is beautiful, but I'm looking ahead. I'm looking way ahead. Like, you know, I'm kind of done. Like, I don't want to say, you know, it's fine that we're describing the situation and how shitty it is, but I'm kind of like, I'm sick of doing that. Like, I'm kind of looking towards the future now of like, okay, everything's kind of fucked, but what can I do to at least, you know, where can I find something I can do about it? And basically, I think Naval has it right. You know, Naval Ravikant?
Mm-hmm.
I think he has it really right where he talks about the gig economy. And I think that's where things are heading, hopefully. Where, I mean, obviously you're going to have these big ass corporations that are going to control large segments of business and everything. But I think if he's right, I mean, it's going to be awesome. Because if you, like, the more, you know, technology advances and the more basic shit becomes automated, the more it's going to free people up to do cool shit. Like you, like, you know, people like you that want to write, or people like me that want to program or whatever, or people that want to write and program or whatever. Like, we're going to have all this free time to do all that. And eventually, I think on the one hand, it's like the, I still don't really get the whole tails and all that kind of shit, but I guess this is what it is. On the one tail end, you're going to have these big monolith corporations, and then you're going to have on the other tail end and millions of like these little tribes of like, you know, of like maybe one day I'll have like a little tribe of like 5 or 10 really good software engineers mixed in with some writers and mixed in with this and mixed in with that. And then we'll have our own little design, whatever studio. And it'll be cool. Cause like, you know, imagine how that's going to be. Like, we're going to set our own prices. We're going to make good money. We're going to be doing creative work. And then on top of that, you know, if we can, since we're the ones that are controlling the business, we can set our own hours. We can set everything up the way we want to, and we can do a gig or two or three, make a shit ton of money, and then just chill for like a month and just go somewhere. It doesn't have to be this horrible 9 to 5 every fucking day with 2 weeks a year, but you don't get sick pay or whatever the fuck the corporations tell you. It's like, nah, we get to choose everything. And then I thought even more ahead. I was like, wow, if that becomes the case, especially with like the way that Wi-Fi is going to be soon and everything, like, it's going to be way more available. Even now how it is, it's crazy available. But imagine in the future, like, we're going to be able to recreate, I think, the tribal habitat. Like, this is the vision I have, that in the future, basically, you're going to have your little tribal business or whatever, and you're going to live in the rainforest. I'm just kind of fantasizing a bit right now, but it's kind of feasible. You're going to live in the rainforest. The rainforest is going to have Wi-Fi, and it's going to have nature and everything else. And you're going to live in like a really cool, ergonomically built fucking setup with like hot water springs and sauna and like a workout area. And you're going to be away from these big concrete stinky ass cities. And you're going to have access to the whole world through your business because you're connected to the internet. You know?
That's like a combination of the Sovereign Individual, that book that came out in like the 1990s and predicted the whole digital revolution right as the internet came out, and Paul Scalise's Voluntary Lindy Village.
I never heard of both of those, but
one's a good book and the other one's stuff that he's been posting lately where he's like saying that government should mandate remote work nationalism so that people can go live wherever they want and they don't have to cluster around cities and recreate the Lindy Village.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's gonna be the future in my opinion, because the more you look at trends nowadays, everything is going back towards nature. Like, look at nutrition. If you know anything about nutrition, you know you're and I'm being a bit like arrogant or whatever you want to call it right now, and I'm saying this kind of half jokingly, but if it's true, like in a lot of ways, if you know anything about nutrition, you're pretty much eating primal or paleo. You're trying to eat like your ancestors. If you know anything about you know, weightlifting, you're trying to do functional movements. You're trying to squat, you're trying to jump, you're trying to sprint, you're trying to do things like your ancestors. If you know anything about I guess those are really the two main ones. But if you, even like you, I mean, you started going crazy doing this fucking corporate job because you were frustrated being in this office environment, you know, because maybe you're more sensitive to that kind of stuff than most people.
Yeah, it's kind of like domestication.
Exactly. So like, everything is heading back towards nature. So if people really start taking this idea of like modernity is shit and like nature is the best thing ever, but at the same time we understand that there's a lot of benefit and positivity with like technology and medicine and breakthroughs and all this kind of stuff, I think eventually people are going to go back to nature, but they're going to find ways to implement technology and all these different things. So it's like, cut the downside, just keep the upside. So we're going to go back to these Lindy type villages. And to one extent or another, obviously we're not going to like, you know, wipe our ass with leaves and fucking do shit like that. But like, I think we're going to go back to a way more environmental style way of living. Cause even living in a house is kind of shitty sometimes, you know, like it would be nice to have like some greenery around, you know, like have a tree inside your house or have like little plants and like all kinds of different nature growing in from your house. Like, that's maybe the future of homes, you know?
Hopefully, dude. I don't like modern architecture. I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, like a sterile concrete freaking, you know, white walls, and it's quiet as hell. You can't hear any kind of crickets or anything. Like,
Cool, dude. We're almost at 2 hours. This has been a good way to decompress. In my early podcasts, I always told people, like, when you sit on a podcast for a while, it's like you're having a long conversation with somebody. The best podcasts are honestly when you're face to face. Like, that's where you get some real primal connection.
Yeah.
But this is pretty close. So yeah, do you feel any relief getting to talk to somebody for an hour?
You're asking that, or you're saying that?
Yeah. Do you feel a little bit decompressed an hour and 48 and 11 seconds in?
Oh, for sure, dude. I mean, I don't live a very social life these days, so it definitely feels good to, you know, get out of my own head a little bit and express what's going on, for sure.
What are you going to be up to in the future, and where can... Maybe you don't know what's going to happen in the future. I have no idea what's going to happen next week, dude. I'm very much a day-to-day kind of person right now. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you, and what are you up to? Like, what kind of stuff are you thinking for this year?
Well, I mean, people can find me on that website, SpartanOwnership.com, or my Instagram or whatever, or Twitter, I guess. SpartanOwner1 is the handle. And that's, you know, how people can find me. And then in terms of, like, what I'm going to be doing, like I said, I'm just going to hopefully not catch the coronavirus in the next few weeks and try to make some money. And at the same time, I'm just trying to build up my skill set, you know, in other things right now, like programming and all that, UX design, and, you know, take it from there. I can't really be too precise about it because, like you said, you know, there's so much that can happen that it's like it's better to be, you know, allow it to happen, not get too rigid about it.
Do you have any advice for me if I decided to give learning code another chance? Like, is there like room for somebody who's like not a master coder and is just like, would it help me in my life if I just knew a little bit of code and I was still trying to do other things, like maybe in a tech startup or something? I'm sure it would.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it would. Naval talks about this quite a bit. I trust his word a lot. I think partly because he's so connected with like these entrepreneurs and everything, and he can kind of see where things are going. So I definitely trust his word. And I think that having some coding knowledge is a huge thing nowadays because it just helps you. But I think, you know, what you're doing too is great. I mean, just writing about all these things and being aware of the industry is definitely a big, big thing. And also, like what you just said, not being a crazy coder, I'm definitely not. Like, I really don't like the coding community. It's hard for me to relate to most coders because I'm not like a big sci-fi guy, and like a lot of them are kind of sci-fi nerdy types, and I'm like a weightlifting and freaking, you know, talking about, I don't know. I don't like any of that like futuristic sci-fi bullshit. But so I'm not like a, and I've never been into coding until recently. So that's another big thing. But yeah, the advice would basically be that you just need to be patient and like change your relationship to coding, or try to see, because coding is so multifaceted. There's so many different aspects, so many different languages, so many different ways you can apply it to an industry. So I would say be open, explore what the industry is all about, and find ways where you can find a bit of emotional alignment, a bit of curiosity, and just realize that it's going to take some time to build that relationship. Like Stephen Pressfield says, you might have to puke a few times, you know, like just to kind of get into it a bit, build some momentum. And then lastly, don't put too much pressure on yourself to learn it. Don't get too frustrated just because you're not getting it. Just learn how to play with it. That's what I mean when I say try to build a relationship with it, is just learn how to play with it. Don't get too serious. Don't get like, I need to learn coding so I can eventually master this skill set and apply it and this and that. Like, no. That'll come over time, but first focus on just playing around with it and getting a feel for it. And then once you do, eventually you'll build momentum and you'll actually be able to do something cool with it. So that's what I'd have to say.
Yeah. I think one of the joys in life that I've noticed is when you're playing around with something and you feel something click and you're like, holy shit, I figured it out.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just need to drag it on for a while to like hit that point. So
yeah, I just like want to end it with this too. Like, there's this guy I follow sometimes. His name's MJ DeMarco. He wrote The Millionaire Fastlane.
Yeah, I read that book in university.
Yeah. So he's a cool dude. And he wrote another book recently called Unscripted. Not too recently, like maybe 2 years ago or something. But in that book, he spoke about how like a big reason why people give up too fast or like never really succeed is because they don't like, he basically said that in order to really enjoy something, you have to create a feedback loop. And he says most people don't work hard enough to create that feedback loop. And that's why I initially gave up coding myself, because I just couldn't get into a good feedback loop. If it seemed like every time I was sitting down to do it, all I would do is encounter a block. And he told this story in his book where there was this guy that started a business by himself, where he bought a truck and this and that. And he basically became like a sewage emptier or whatever. Like, he would go to people's houses and empty their septic tanks. So, you know, all he would do is pull up, and he knew all the knowledge of like how to get in there, the right tubes you had to use, and like how to operate the machinery. And, you know, somebody would look at that and go like, ugh, that sounds like a horrible job. You're going to people's houses and like emptying their sewage. Like, ew, I would rather be a freaking, you know, 7-Eleven cashier or something. But it's like, not only did he make a lot of money doing this, but he actually became passionate about it. And he actually said, I became passionate about other people's shit. And he was saying that half jokingly, but he said, essentially, he became passionate about it because he got a feedback loop. He mastered the skills. He mastered the technique. He understood the industry, the machinery. he was making good money with it. So when he went to work, he felt like he was in his element. So I think that's a big part of like why people give up, or why people don't like coding, or why people don't like anything that's like kind of like, you know, it's kind of weird and hard to get into and kind of complex. And like, it's because they just don't put in enough work to get to the feedback loop stage. And I'm not even there yet personally, but just knowing that I'm not there yet gives me so much confidence. Cause it's like, all right, I'm just slowly playing around, tinkering and trial and erroring my way there. And then eventually I know that once I get good, it's going to feel great to sit there and freaking build something, you know, like, so that's what I wanted to simply say, because I think that's important. You know, the feedback loop concept is definitely key in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a good, you've probably heard of him, Cal Newport.
Yeah.
Who writes Deep Work. And I remember I read one of his books at the end of university, and it was like, you shouldn't be following your passion. Like, passion emerge out of skill, is his thesis at least.
Exactly.
So once you give something enough time and you start learning the skill, maybe you didn't like it at first, but suddenly because you're valuable to somebody else, and because you're good at something and you can do the job, it all clicks. And exactly. You don't necessarily have to be passionate about it. Like, I'm not that passionate about writing news, but when it clicks and I have like these interesting conversations and I get to meet people and see what kind of work they're doing, I'm like, all right, this isn't that bad actually.
Exactly. And like, for things that you're actually passionate about, like, let's say you're really passionate about, I don't know, surfing or whatever. Imagine now you have to do it for money every day with discipline. Like, you probably would kind of lose some of that passion. It's mm-hmm. it's kind of the same thing with sex, in my experience. Like, if, you know, it becomes like too routine and like it has to happen. Like, with my ex-girlfriend, like, sometimes we get into this routine where it was like every time after dinner at this exact time. And it was like, I literally started losing kind of interest. And, mm-hmm. and then I started remembering the days when we first just met, and it was so spontaneous. And like, I feel like, you know, that's why it's such a key distinction. Like, maybe the things that you're actually really passionate about, you should just keep them as passions, you know, just do them when you really just do them with a spirit of just pure love. And like, just let yourself be spontaneous and let yourself keep it as a passion. And then for the things that you're actually not super passionate about, but you enjoy, like you just said, the writing, you get to meet people, it clicks, you're adding value, people are commenting on it and telling you how great the work you're doing is. Plus, you've put in all the hours now, you've built up the skill set. Initially, maybe it wasn't that great, but now it's like you're getting all these added benefits from it. So now I'm sure you can see yourself really taking it far, you know?
Yeah, I think if there was like a thesis we've come up with this conversation today, is that people should embrace volatility, but also have like a floating structure in way, so that you're not going too far down the peaks of volatility, and you're not trying to like control your entire life, but you're also allowing yourself to play with randomness and let things emerge.
Exactly, exactly. Or as I would say, try to balance the inner Goggins with the inner Portezi.
Cool, dude. This has been really good.
Yes.
And I hope Gordon listened to the whole thing. He wants to come talk to me too soon. I talked to him on text for a while, like I said earlier. But he wants to come on and talk as well. So I'm actually really interested to see how his life off the internet has been, because I've been able to do it for a few weeks, but he's already almost at 3 months, I think. So that's some willpower in today's age.
Yeah, definitely would be interested in hearing that conversation for sure.
Cool, dude. Good night, everybody. What time is it here? It's 5 o'clock. It's night time for you. Stay safe out there. No coronavirus. Wash your hands. try to go remote if you can. If not, just survive and don't talk to your grandma in person.
Yeah, I'm just gonna wear a mask and freaking roll the dice for now.
Dude. Oh, we're almost at 2 hours.
Yeah, dude. I think this was a nice and juicy podcast, man. We definitely hit it hard. It was good.
Cool. All right. See you, everybody.